Today's episode is brought to you by Nguyen Coffee Supply. Nguyen is the first ever Vietnamese-American owned importer, supplier, and roaster sourcing green coffee beans from Vietnam, which are roasted fresh in Brooklyn. Vietnam is the world's largest producer of Robusta coffee beans and second largest producer of coffee overall. I drink it every morning now. It's phenomenal. Fires me up. Nguyen Coffee Supply launched on November 17th of this year. Brand new business. You can find them at nguyencoffeesupply.com. Nguyen Coffee Supply. Two blends, courage and loyalty. I like them both. Courage fires me up. Loyalty makes me feel warm inside. Do it now. Nguyen Coffee Supply, nguyencoffeesupply.com. You won't be disappointed. Enjoy.
So this is happening in countries where already the level of exploitation is quite high, because states either lack the capacity or maybe lack the will to ensure that workers are in decent conditions.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you, wherever you are, so you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
Internal communications obtained by the UK's Parliament shed light on how Facebook used data. Verizon's oath settles for $5 million over child data protection, and Alexandra Channer is my guest. Pages of confidential documents obtained by a UK parliamentary committee from a company embroiled in litigation with Facebook in the US seem to reveal that Facebook sold data to certain buyers as it sought to grow. Zuckerberg denies the allegations, but the trove of emails between Facebook and a company called 643 contains several communications with Facebook CEO that seem to discredit his assertion that Facebook never sold users' data. In other news, the Wall Street Journal reports that Facebook's board of directors backs Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg's handling of the anti-Semitic campaign against George Soros, and Facebook plans to a buyback of $9 billion more of its shares to boost investor confidence after a stock slump of more than 40% since July. Verizon's oath has agreed to pay $5 million to the New York State Attorney General to settle charges that its AOL unit violated the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act of 1998, also known as COPPA. It's the largest settlement paid by a company in COPPA history. New York's Attorney General had accused AOL of displaying ads on children's sites, even though AOL's policies prohibited it. Sapna Mashawari has more in the New York Times. The FCC's own internal inspector general has completed an investigation of FCC chairman Ajit Pai. It found that Pai didn't violate ethics rules when he failed to disclose conversations he'd had with former White House counsel Don McGahn regarding the Sinclair merger, because the FCC's rules didn't prohibit the conversation, even though the FCC isn't a cabinet-level agency and is supposed to be independent of the White House. Margaret Harding McGill has a story in Politico. Google's contract employees are pushing for better working conditions. In a letter to Google CEO Sundar Pichai, Googlers are calling for inclusion in corporate-wide communications, as well as equal pay and better treatment. The contract workers, known internally as TVCs, are also referred to as Google's shadow workforce, and they were excluded from Google's new policies regarding sexual harassment, which the company began implementing following the walkout of thousands of employees worldwide protesting the company's handling of Andy Rubin's departure after he'd been accused of sexual misconduct, an accusation Mr. Rubin has denied. The contract employees say that Google's $30 billion in profit this year alone is more than enough for the company to compensate them fairly. Finally, Google has also found a new bug exposing user data to some 52 million users. The company had already planned to shut down Google Plus by the end of next year, but it has accelerated the closure to August. Google CEO Sundar Pichai is set to testify before the House Judiciary Committee on today, Tuesday, December 11th, and the new data breach is sure to be an issue. And you can find links to all these stories in the show notes and also in our Twitter feed, and our handle is at WashingTech. Stay with us. For watching Tech Tech Policy Podcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can listen at the gym, in the car, or on your morning run. How about Becoming by Michelle Obama? You can download Becoming free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free audiobook and 30-day trial today at washingtech.com/book.
Tech policy is global policy. This is the Washing Tech. Tech Policy Podcast. Serving the world.
My guest today is Alexandra Channer. Alex is a human rights and social impact advisor, and she works to enable businesses to identify, understand, and manage their human rights impact, and in particular, taking steps to tackle modern slavery. Previously, Alex was Verisk Maplecroft's human rights strategy lead and principal analyst. In that role, she helped scope and deliver due diligence programs to help companies mitigate the risk of violating the human rights of workers and communities. Prior to that, she worked for 7 years as a human rights defender in Kosovo. She was also lecturer at the American University in Kosovo. She earned her PhD in political science and comparative politics from the University of Pennsylvania. Please welcome Alex Channer. Dr. Channer, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much, Joe. It's good to be here.
So tell us about your practice and four or five issues that it focuses on.
Yeah, Joe. So I'm what's called an advisor in business and human rights. So that means that I help business to do what they do and to do that in an ethical and responsible manner. And so I think, you know, probably for your listeners, they're probably familiar with news stories about, you know, when things go really very badly wrong for business. So, for example, 2013, the terrible building collapse in Bangladesh, where over 1,000 garment workers died. Or perhaps an issue a bit closer to home for the tech industry, you know, child slavery in cobalt mines in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So, cobalt is one of the key raw materials that goes into lithium ion batteries, and that then goes into obviously mobile phones and laptops. So my job is to help businesses, and especially those with very complex global supply chains, to try and prevent this kind of harm from happening, to do that by identifying and managing what we call their human rights risks. And the reason that I'm doing this and lots of other people, you know, like me, is that we're seeing increasing scrutiny of business behaviour and particularly respect around labour rights and civil and political rights. And that's partly driven by investors. We're definitely seeing much more interest from investors in how a company behaves. I think really sort of seen as an indicator of long-term potential growth now for investors. And then the other, you know, real driver at the moment is the response to laws. So we've got modern slavery laws on the books in the UK, just adopted in Australia a few weeks ago. And then also you have a law in California. And so that means that businesses covered by those laws have got to report the steps they're taking to manage and prevent modern slavery and trafficking in their supply chains. And then I think, you know, lastly, what I'd want to point to is that I really think there's an increasing recognition that business can be a critical vehicle for change. Just the simple fact that a brand, someone in a business can take a decision to promote decent working conditions. That can trickle right down through their whole global supply chain and into some of the countries where, you know, some of the poorest workers are employed. So, you know, business can have a really positive impact is really recognised, I think, as a vehicle for change. And for me personally, that's something that I find really very inspiring.
And so you recently released a human rights outlook report, and you released it earlier this year, showing how automation is affecting workers in Southeast Asia. What are some of the trends that you're seeing that you think policymakers ought to be concerned about there?
Yeah, so that's right. So earlier this year, with my former employer, Verisk Maplecroft, which is a global risk advisory firm, every year we produce this analysis of big strategic trends, and I decided this year to look at the impact of automation, and particularly we were looking at the impact of automation on workers who do repetitive manual tasks. So, you know, typically that means we're talking about a low-skilled worker, you know, in a factory or a warehouse or on a farm. And we wanted to see how that might impact their livelihoods. We chose it because it seems that the replacement of humans by machines is happening much faster than anyone had anticipated. And that could change the geography of supply chains, and it might also start changing the relationships between brands, suppliers and workers, and between, you know, the host countries of global brands and also the countries which formerly hosted big supply chains. So, you know, we came up with sort of three big trends, really, which I'd highlight. So the first is that, you know, because things are happening faster than we thought, it seems that, you know, perhaps machines will start to become cheaper and more efficient than workers for these particular types of tasks. And that might actually see the reshoring of some of this production back to countries where labour costs were traditionally much higher. So, you know, you might see garment production or electronics manufacturing perhaps coming back to the US, moving to China or Japan. And so you could see then brands exiting countries like Bangladesh or Vietnam or Cambodia, where, you know, they've been having an impact in promoting good, decent working conditions for the workers that they employ. And so as well as reshoring, then, you know, what happens to the workers who are left behind, whose jobs are displaced? The ILO has done a lot of analysis of the impacts that automation might have on low-skilled jobs. When we looked at the Asian Five, I think it's about 56% of workers are at risk of losing their jobs. And so this is happening in countries where already the level of exploitation is quite high, because states either lack the capacity or maybe lack the will to ensure that workers are in decent conditions. So the risk then is that those workers, they'll all be competing for a diminishing supply of low-skilled work, because, you know, we know that technology creates more jobs, but it looks like, you know, these jobs will be ones which require higher cognitive capabilities. So low-skilled workers, you know, their jobs are likely not going to be replaced. You know, what are the options they're going to face? So, you know, it might be increasingly that you've got to migrate for work, and then that obviously raises the risk of falling into the hands of traffickers and modern slavery. Or it means, you know, staying where you are, and potentially you might then be working for suppliers who are competing against machines. And that might mean they're lowering wages, and that, you know, workers are forced into deeper exploitation. And just to bring that back to business, then that means that a human-free factory doesn't necessarily mean then that your supply chain is suddenly free of human rights risks. Actually, what you could be seeing is that these workers might be being displaced into other more hidden parts of your supply chain, hidden subcontractors, or perhaps in the sort of raw materials production as well.
Mm-hmm. Especially the areas that are proprietary in nature, as they develop and their research development improves their products, there will be different components that are made that nobody even knows about because they're protected under non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, you know, that's one of the things we don't know. You know, a lot of is unknown, isn't it? We don't know how all this technology is going to impact the economy and the types of products and goods that we buy. So supply chains themselves are going to evolve with that. And it's just a question of how these low-skilled workers are able and capable to adapt and fit into that, and whether the whole whether that means that increasing exploitation is part of the way that suppliers compete in that new economy.
And so, how many workers do you expect will be affected by this?
Well, so you know, when we look at the ILO study, I think I said that, you know, when they looked at the Asian Five, which is Cambodia, Indonesia, Thailand, the Philippines, and Vietnam, they were talking about 56% of workers whose jobs will be at high risk of displacement by automation, and that's by 2040. And if we look then just at Vietnam, I think the figures, it's around 67% of workers. So that's about 36 million workers who will all be looking for alternative livelihoods. And if you then kind of take that down to one group, so, you know, one of the issues that I've looked at and, you know, find particularly concerning is women comprise a large proportion of the low-skilled workforce. in many developing economies, which are in brands' global supply chains. And particularly if you look at the garment sector, I think it's a real concern. So the issue with the garment sector for some of the kind of the growing garment producers like Cambodia and Vietnam is, first of all, that it comprises a large part of their manufacturing economy anyway. So in Cambodia, I think it's about 59% of all manufacturing jobs are in the garment, textile and footwear industry. And women are most of those workers. So in Cambodia and Vietnam, about 67% of the jobs that are at risk are all done by women. And obviously that has some knock-on effects on families and on children's livelihoods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we look at the workers in the U.S. who have these H-1B visas and the spousal visas, the U.S. is now going away from allowing spouses of workers who come in on H-1B visas to work here in the U.S. So then when they return to their home countries, there's going to be even fewer jobs there, presumably.
Yes. So, you know, I think women, you know, if we think of the whole pool of workers who are displaced by automation, who are workers who are low skilled, you know, women are going to be those who are most adversely impacted and also those who are most vulnerable. So, you know, we shouldn't really forget also that, you know, women are the majority of modern slavery victims across the world, according to the data from the Global Slavery Index. So, and a lot of these countries also are really trying hard to work towards achieving the Sustainable Development Goals. So there's a particular goal, Goal 5, which is all about gender equality. So, you know, we could really see an impact on the achievement of that goal, both for the states and also for the businesses that also are part of that whole Sustainable Development Goal program.
And so what do we in the West, in the US and the UK in particular, Alex, what do we stand to lose as consumers, as workers, as employers, what do we, as investors, if things don't change, what can we expect to lose out on?
Well, I mean, I think at the beginning I said that there's this, you know, increasing recognition that business can really be a vehicle of change and transformation. And I think, you know, that inspires genuinely a lot of people who work in some of these big global organizations or entrepreneurs who set up businesses. And I'm sure especially that's part of the drive to develop new technologies and think of, you know, new clever ways of doing things. So, you know, it would be nice to tie that to general also social goals of development and progress, and to think that that was, you know, helping countries and poorer people to develop and improve their lot in life. So I think that, you know, that what we might lose is this, is the idea of social progress and social purpose linked to that business. If we don't do automation in a responsible manner and try and mitigate the adverse impacts of it.
And so what do you see being done to correct the situation already? What should policymakers be advocating for?
Well, so I think this is why it's very important for business to get engaged, because at the moment, you know, there seems to be a lot of consensus that states really aren't doing enough about it. We've got a lot of analysis. We've got a lot of organizations producing data about the potential impacts and a lot of analysis about, you know, who this is going to negatively impact and who's going to benefit. But states at the moment aren't doing what they should be doing. So that's, you know, in particular, investing in R&D and innovation and crucially education. So, you know, the key for these low-skilled workers in developing economies and for all workers, so that we've all got the adaptability to respond to automation and learn to work alongside machines, that's education. So it's how can we upskill workers of the future, get education right in school so that we're learning the right skills that are needed for that time. So, you know, critical thinking and creativity and empathy and collaboration, you know, training teachers, things like lifelong learning, so that, you know, these existing workers, you know, when they face the fact that they might lose their jobs, they've got ways to retrain and to try and find an alternative livelihood. So, you know, these are sort of key things that states states need to be doing. And for business, then, it's about businesses tracking what they're doing. Like, they can help to provide information about what's going on in their supply chain, and then use their voice to try and influence governments and encourage them to take action. And then also, you know, I think very importantly, just to think about integrating any decisions they make about automation into their very usual human rights assessment process. So if you're making a decision about automation, it might typically just be in your procurement department or your logistics. But so just make sure that that goes through a human rights lens, so that, you know, you're considering what the adverse impacts might be on workers who are very dependent on your supply chain.
Well, Alex, thanks for joining us. You know, here in the U.S., we've been talking a lot about advocating for building inroads on the local level as opposed to the national level. But it seems to me that there are, you know, some real global concerns that I don't think either the Federalist or Localist approach really touch on. So thanks for shedding light for us here. And we look forward to more work from you and ways we can be involved.
Well, thanks very much.
Are you ready for your icebreaker?
Yes. Okay. Let's do it.
All right. So we'll do that. Your career hack and your pick for our book this week. Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker, Alex. The rules are simple. I spin the wheel. It gives us a random question. I ask it and you answer. Sound good?
Yep. Sounds good.
All right, let's give it a shot. Okay, what's one thing that most people don't know about you?
So it's probably that I translate from Albanian to English.
Wow.
So I spent a long time, about 8 years, living in Kosovo. It's where I did my doctoral research in political science, and I learned Albanian, and you know, I really love the language, and I translate plays and books in my spare time for fun, and also just to kind of, you know, I think there's some real creativity and brilliance coming out of Kosovo, so it's nice to be part of sharing that.
Wow, that's impressive. So how do you stay productive and successful, Alex? What are some of your tactics for getting your work done?
So my tips here are, you know, I guess they're quite personal, but it's about getting outdoors. So, you know, I really think taking exercise and being outside, looking at beautiful landscapes, it's good and it's inspiring stuff. And I think being part of your community. So I think you get real buzz and creativity and excitement from just having, you know, good relationships in your community and working with people and building things together. And then I think always being curious, learning, constantly seeing your life as a learning process and asking questions. So I think, and on the productivity stuff, I think, you know, get up early, get outside, never stop learning. That's what my sort of philosophy is.
What are you reading and watching these days?
Well, I know I should probably say something really intellectual, shouldn't I? But I'm reading a good novel at the moment by Rose Tremain. It's called Music and Silence. And I like reading really sort of beautiful literature. I think it's good to keep your imagination and creativity stimulated. I'm watching Suits because, you know, after Meghan married Harry, I thought I better watch the series to learn who she was and see her in action. So,
well, thanks again, Alex, for joining me. What are some takeaways you'd like to leave with us, and where can we find you?
So I think the main takeaways is just, you know, to remember that, you know, how a business treats both its workers and the communities that it impacts is increasingly something that you need to have on your agenda, and that, you know, doing business ethically is now considered a mainstream behavior for business. To find me, well, you know, you can find me on LinkedIn, and then also have a website, which is alexandrachana.com. So I'm always very happy to hear and talk to people.
And you've been listening to Dr. Alexandra Channer, independent human rights advisor and consultant. Dr. Channer, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
And that concludes episode 166 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment, head over to Apple Podcasts, give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you back here next week. Take care.